Welcome to Simple Living Works, episodes 96 and 97. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host with my guest, Shane Claiborne. If you're new to this podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen through clear to the end. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye at my cue. And who's Shane Claiborne? From working alongside Mother Teresa in Calcutta to founding The Simple Way in inner-city Philadelphia, Shane is a best-selling author, renowned activist, sought-after speaker, and self-proclaimed recovering sinner. Tony and Shane Uncut, the complete dialogue in 8 episodes between Tony Campolo and Shane Claiborne on simpler living and global justice, became the DVD Simply Enough, reissued by World Vision Canada as Choose Justice. Tony and Shane Uncut is episodes 20 through 27, back in 2014 of this podcast, available at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Now, in part 1, we catch up on the Simple Way community, the newer Red Letter Christians movement, and in part 2, we talk about Shane's latest book, Executing Grace, How the Death Penalty Killed Jesus, and Why It's Killing Us, and numerous other ways that Shane is spreading the message of simpler, just living. Here's Shane, recently recorded. Well, Shane, you and I have known each other a long time. For those folks who aren't familiar with The Simple Way and Red Letter Christians, please start back at the beginning. Tell us about how the Simple Way community was founded, and then how the Red Letter Christians movement began.
Sure, man. Well, it's good to reconnect, and I love all the work that you've done. Got much respect for what you do, brother. And I'm a Tennessee boy. I grew up down south, came up to Philly to go to college, and went to Eastern University just outside of Philly. And while I was in college studying sociology and studying the Bible, everything kind of lit up when there was really a crisis in Philadelphia around housing, and there were about 3,000 families on the waiting list for housing. And during that time, a group of courageous mothers and their children, really out of desperation, moved into an abandoned church building and started living there. And I don't know whether or not they knew the depths of what they were doing, but it, you know, evoked all of the history of sanctuary and the church being a safe place for people in crisis. And it made the news, and that's how we heard about it. Sadly, the response of the Archdiocese of the Catholic Church here in Philadelphia had told them that they had to leave, and if they weren't out within 48 hours, they could be arrested for trespassing. And that was very troubling to us, you know, and I think to many people, and including the families. And so they hung a banner that said, "How can we worship a homeless man on Sunday and ignore one on Monday?" And that's really the spark that lit the fire for us. It started a student movement on our college campus that then a group of us out of that, after many of those families got housing and everything, we ended up very inspired by them and also inspired by the early church in the book of Acts, where it says that they worshiped out of each other's homes, and the early Christians shared everything they had. No one claimed any of their possessions were their own. And on that vision of sort of the micro church lived out of dinner tables and living rooms and creating a sense of community and sharing is what we set out to do. And it's been 20 years, man, since we moved in here to the north side of Philadelphia. And we started out of one house. And over the last 2 decades, we've kind of built a village together. And we've got a bunch of community gardens and houses that we're renovating that used to be abandoned, and just really great neighbors that we get to try to build a neighborhood that we're proud of together and see kids grow up and be able to really seek the future that God has for them. And so it's been a fun couple of decades. And now Red Letter Christians is a little younger. That's that we just started that a few years ago. And that's more of the public work that I do, writing and speaking, and particularly trying to harmonize voices of speakers and writers and different folks that are really committed to take the words of Jesus seriously. And in the old Bibles, you know, they have the words of Jesus and the Gospels are in red. And that's where we kind of got the name of Red Letter Christians. Because ironically, a lot of Christianity kind of has lost track of things like the Sermon on the Mount and the things that were at the heart of Jesus. And so we say we want a Christianity that looks like Jesus again, and that lives as if Jesus meant the stuff he said. So there's an incredible group of folks on our website, redletterchristians.org. Some pretty amazing voices and communities that are linked up out there.
At one time, you were considered Tony Campolo to be your mentor. Now it seems like Tony is your colleague.
We're absolutely doing this together. It's a privilege to, you know, Tony was my professor in sociology at Eastern, and now has become a dear friend, kind of like a spiritual grandfather or something, you know. And so we get to do a lot of stuff together these days, and we kind of head up the Red Letter Christians movement together.
I understand that you're co-teaching some classes at Eastern now with Tony.
I keep hearing that, so I guess I am.
Eastern is affiliated, if I understand it correctly, with the American Baptist Church, which is what, in terms of mainline denominations, would be considered the moderate or even progressive Baptists, in comparison, let's say, with the Southern Baptists, who might be considered to be the conservative or fundamentalist Baptists. And Eastern is now considered a red-letter Christian university. Tell us what that means.
Well, first of all, it's interesting to see how things evolve, because it started as Eastern Baptist College, and, you know, and had the seminary, and things have grown. Like a lot of these liberal arts Christian colleges, you end up with a blend of all kinds of different people. So certainly has Baptist roots, but has an eclectic mix of students that are at Eastern now, and at the seminary as well. But I think that Eastern has been known for holding together Jesus and justice, you know, and for things like that were never meant to be separated, like faith and works, or the Great Commission and the Great Commandment, you know, these things that loving our neighbor and loving God, they have to stay together. And a lot of evangelicalism, I think, is separated or even prioritized evangelism versus social justice, and we really believe that those things have to go together. And so, you know, I think it's a great place for folks that want to follow Jesus and tries to embody that in the values of the college too, moving towards wind energy and trying to pay housekeeping staff and others like a living wage, and being a voice around things that matter. So I want to see it keep doing more and more of that. I remember Tony showed me an article from like the 60s where there were these massive protests against the war, and it said, and well represented were colleges like Eastern University. So I think we've got to remember those roots, and we've got to keep that fire alive. But I'm delighted to be still connected to Eastern. And one of the great things that Eastern does is provide a scholarship for one of our young people here in Kensington every year. So one of the kids that we've got to see grow up or have close friends that they're connected to, we name a Simple Way scholar that gets a full tuition scholarship to Eastern every year. So that's awesome. So I love that. I think we need some courageous universities these days. You talked about conservative and progressive or liberal. I find that the categories are pretty unhelpful these days, and they get pretty blurry, because there's some things that folks call me conservative on, and other things that, you know, that folks call me liberal on. And I think Jesus kind of defies labels and camps and categories, and seems to have tax collectors and zealots and Essenes and Pharisees and all kinds of different groups together, and kind of pulling the best out of each of them, but also challenging the places where we need to be challenged. And one of the problems, I think, politically in America, I mean, a lot of folks sort of feel like they don't have a home when it comes to parties or politics. And I think part of that is because my frameworks for the things I value is a consistent life ethic, you know, the sanctity of all life, and that pro-life has become synonymous with anti-abortion. But I think there's a lot of us would like to change that and see a pro-life movement that is actually pro-life from womb to tomb, and that stands against gun violence and the death penalty and war and militarism, and advocates for life in cares about the movement for Black lives and racial injustice, and cares about the environment. So that's the kind of pro-life movement I want to be a part of.
Indeed. I'm really glad you brought that up, Shane, because I'm a minister in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, which is the largest Lutheran body and also one of the most progressive denominations in the country. And some people don't consider us evangelicals because evangelical has taken on a political connotations. You know, when you hear in the media, well, 85% of the white evangelical men voted for this candidate or whatever, I kind of cringe, because I prefer, if you're going to speak in political terms, you use terms like conservative or regressive or progressive or whatever. Because evangelical is a precious word in the Christian church, and it's become used very cavalierly to be with the, strictly conservative.
Yeah, well, the root of evangelical is, you know, good news and proclaimers of good news. And it's important to remember that, you know, because a lot of evangelicalism doesn't sound like good news. You know, one of my friends says it sounds like bad news or sometimes okay news, but rarely good news, you know. And I look at Jesus, and he's proclaiming things that are good news to the poor, and release of captive to the oppressed. And it's a beautiful, liberating gospel. But sometimes evangelicals have actually been known for the very things that Jesus spoke out against. We've been often the champions of death more than the champions of life when it comes to guns and war and a lot of these issues that we're talking about. You know, we'll talk about that, you know, my death penalty book, but you see, that's a very poignant example where we've stood on an issue that is a pro-life issue, but we've been on the wrong side of that one, I think, as a majority of Christians. But I'm optimistic, though. I think there's a whole generation that is wants a Christianity that looks like Jesus again. And you know, it was Gandhi that said he loves Jesus. He just wished the Christians looked more like him. And so that's kind of what we're after. And there's a lot of folks that are reflecting on the state of evangelicalism, and I contributed the chapter to a book that my friend Mark Laberton out at Fuller has pulled together, a great theme to think about the future of evangelicalism. And there are some great folks out there, Gabe Seguero, like Reverend William Barber down in North Carolina, Tracy Blackman from Ferguson out in Missouri there, and like folks that, especially leaders of color that I think are living a much more integrated and healthy, holistic evangelicalism. They love Jesus, and they care deeply about justice, and that's the kind of thing I hope that we can lean into that. And, you know, I don't feel a lot of need to reclaim the word evangelicalism like that's why we've started using the words red letter Christians. You know, I think beyond anything, we want followers of Jesus. We want disciples of Christ. But I think what happened in this last election, as you mentioned, 81% of white evangelicals voted for Donald Trump. And you know, I want to say I'm not partisan on this. I think Hillary Clinton was very hard to get excited about, and she didn't have a consistent life ethic either. She was for the death penalty and had a terrible record on abortion. And, you know, so I think that, but what we see in Donald Trump, I think, is what happens to evangelicalism when we've forsaken Jesus and we've made idols out of wealth and fame and power, and we've lost things like the Beatitudes, blessed are the merciful, blessed are the meek, the poor, the peacemakers, the pure in spirit. I mean, those are the things that Jesus blessed, and those are the things that are almost the antithesis of the things that we adore in America, and that I think some of our politics bring that to light, you know. I think you kind of wonder what would it look like if every Christian was more committed to Jesus than to the political candidate or party. And that's one of Tony's great lines. He said something happens when you mix faith and politics. It's kind of like mixing horse manure and ice cream. He said it doesn't mess up the manure, but it sure messes up the ice cream.
Well, now, Shane, most folks became first acquainted with you when you wrote the book, The Irresistible Revolution. And I'm glad to see that that's come out now in a 10th anniversary edition. You've written other books that are particularly pertinent to the time. You wrote Jesus for President. I think that came out even before President Obama was elected.
Yeah.
But it seems to have a whole lot of relevance to today.
Yeah, I think so. And it's so interesting that, I mean, what's some of these things that are happening right now, I think that I did a project called Jesus Bombs and Ice Cream with Ben Cohen from Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream, and really critiquing a world that is plagued by war and militarism. And I think that's all just as relevant today, you know, as when we did it several years ago. We did actually the first show of that on the 10th anniversary of September 11th. Growing up, I heard someone say that too many Christians are so heavenly minded that they're not much earthly good. You know, we can kind of have our head so far up in the heavens that we forget the struggles here on earth. And I believe in the afterlife, but I also believe that the gospel is relevant to this life, and that the kingdom of God isn't just something we hope for when we die, but something that we're to bring on earth while we live. I care about political things because it's a part of loving my neighbor, you know, is the policies that we make that affect refugees and immigrants, you know. And I don't think that laws are the be all and end all, you know, but I do think that when Jesus says, you welcome a stranger, you welcome me. So the question is whether or not we're going to welcome immigrants, I think, you know, but how we can do that responsibly and how we can create policies that are conduits of love and of hospitality and generosity. So I think the word politics comes from polis, you know, which really just means people, like a metropolis, you know, having, I think that it's good to think about those things. And people are talking, you know, people are talking about things that matter, you know, the environment and gun violence and mass incarceration and racial justice. So I think it's a beautiful time to be a Christian and to have our faith connect to the world we live in.
Well, now, Shane, when the Simple Way was founded, it was not only there in Philadelphia, but also there were other communities on the East Coast. Is that still true?
We never set out to start a franchise, you know. but we you know, the Simple Way's always been our little community here in Kensington on the north side of Philly. But you're right, we've seen all kinds of really beautiful communities get started. And, you know, some of those are like the seed that Jesus talks about, the seeds, you know, that fall into the ground. And some of them are have a long life. Some of them, they don't have very deep roots. So they are beautiful for a moment and then they kind of fade away. So we've seen, you know, some communities come and go. But we've also seen, I think, a resurgence in some of the older communities. And there's incredible communities like Koinonia Farm down in Georgia and Reba Place in Chicago and the Catholic Worker Houses, that some of these communities are 50 or, you know, 100 years old or even older than that. And so it's beautiful to see a resurgence of folks that are longing for community. And I think we're made in the image of community, you know, a God that reflects this sort of plurality of oneness, Father, Son, and Spirit, and we're created in God's image and made to love and to be loved. So it's almost a lost art in some ways in our industrialized countries to live in community, but I think a lot of folks are starting to exercise muscles again and really longing to live deeply with a group of people.
You've been listening to my conversation with Shane Claiborne, co-founder of The Simple Way, author, and speaker. Tony and Shane Uncut, episodes 20 through 27 of this podcast, is available at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click on Backup. To learn how that powerful dialogue came to be, listen to episode number 3, The Saugut of Simply Enough. Our hope is that you will be so motivated by this series that you will want to share the message with others in your congregation or group. Order a copy of the DVD, Choose Justice, with this extensive discussion guide from the store at thesimpleway.org for only $10. It is also available from World Vision Canada and from Tony Campolo's store. See pictures of our crew in Philadelphia producing the original and links to the bonus segments. To get better acquainted with Tony and Shane and their ministries, follow the links in the show notes of those earlier episodes. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to simplelivingworks@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on the Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org. Click window number 3. Also, it really helps our visibility when you give Simple Living Works a 5-star review on iTunes. Well, we have lots of news. My colleague Lee Van Ham's new book has been released. Lee is the executive director of Jubilee One Earth Economics, entitled From Egos to Eden, Our Heroic Journey to Keep Earth Livable, is volume 2 of Lee's trilogy called Eden for the 21st Century. I've read an advanced copy, reviewed it, and highly recommend it. Lee and I talked about volume 1, Blinded by Progress, and volume 2 on podcasts. The links to those episodes are given in the show notes. Need a nudge? I've been producing Today's Simpler Living Nudge for over a year and welcome to you subscribe for free. Receive it by email or Twitter. Just send me an email with the subject nudge at simplelivingworks@yahoo.com. I've received lots of interesting responses, which you can read on simplelivingworks.org. Click on Recent Comments in window number 5 or see the link in the show notes. We've simplified our blogs for this year. The weekly Nudge focuses only on the efforts of Simple Living Works. The weekly Digest includes the latest posts from colleague organizations. Both come with a free subscription to our Simple Living Works blog. The much more complete, almost obsessively detailed monthly Digest is now updated at least once a week and kept on the Simple Living Works site. Links to the monthly digest are given to both the weekly nudge and the weekly digest. We hope you'll check it out, but we don't want you to be overwhelmed by the amount of help available toward a life of voluntary simplicity, which young adults now are inclined to call minimalism. Time to wrap up this episode of Simple Living Works Podcast. If you're new to Simple Living Works Podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen a little longer. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye here. Peace. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will now through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Remember, you can listen to all episodes of the podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click Preview, Backup, and choose the episodes you want with or without show notes. Subscription to this podcast and our weekly blogs are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. You can also subscribe in iTunes to my other podcast, The Common Good Podcast, which I produce and co-host with Jubilee One Earth Economics. Send us your email address to receive the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share-Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. We do not solicit nor accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive way of life. It's not a list of rules nor living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. It's so much more than a hobby. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everybody's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the saying, live simply, that others may simply live, as our closing theme song proclaims. It's a balance of personal responsibility and advocacy for just public policy. It's more than personal happiness, though that's quite important. As you may sense, we put a strong emphasis on social justice. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the 5 life standards of Living More with Less, the classic by Doris Jansen Longacre. I've discussed these standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 through 2011. The 3 parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video. Links are listed in the show notes. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Come everyone who has thirst, those who have nothing come by. Why spend your labor for things that simply do not satisfy? Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. The bread in your cupboard belongs to one who is hungry out there, and the coats in your closet unused could warm up the ones who stand bare. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. See how the wealth you acquire is borne on the backs of the poor, whose children beg daily for food, whose land feeds your child who wants more. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Your children who need their own rooms lament that the forest will die, and those who would join field to field must stop long enough to ask why. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. God chose the weak of the world to shame the way of the strong. Learn how to live from the poor. Their wisdom will help us belong. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Do not conform to the world. Be certain that better's not more. Contentment will transform your need, awakening what God has in store. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live.